everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week, and the Eagles are going to the Super Bowl as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 129. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Greg Cosell from NFL Films to talk about the Eagles' win against those Minnesota Vikings on both sides of the ball. Who stood out? What plays worked? What were the changes from a week ago against Atlanta? And how will this team match up with the New England Patriots next Sunday night? We will tease a little bit of that last part all in one segment before we get to our scouting report, where this week we will break down a little bit of a local product who I think will stand out this week at the Senior Bowl down in Mobile, Alabama. Look, I'd love to give you my personal thoughts on going to the Super Bowl. If you're a loyal listener, you know I grew up a diehard Eagles fan. I'm from Philadelphia. I have lived and breathed and partially died with all the past years, all 32 years of my life. Just so, so excited. But I'm excited for that one more. I'm just so excited for this game next Sunday against New England. It's going to be a lot of fun. I don't want to get too emotional as I keep talking about this. So hopefully the next time or a couple episodes from now, we'll be having a much different conversation. But before we get into all of that stuff, let's not waste any more time. Greg Cosell and I break down the win over Minnesota and give you a very early peek at the upcoming matchup against New England on both sides of the ball. Let's get to that chat now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Pleased to be joined once again on Chalk Talk here in the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. NFL Film Senior Producer Greg Cosell. Greg, it is almost Super Bowl week. We're about 24 hours removed now from the Eagles' thrilling victory over the Minnesota Vikings in the NFC title game. Just an outstanding performance in a game you and I, we had spent a lot of time talking about leading up to the game. We watched the game together, and I think both of us were shocked at how the game unfolded. You know, both of us really felt that the Eagles would win this game, but in the manner that they did, I think was very surprising, and it was great to see, a great way to go into the Super Bowl.
Well, I'll disagree with one thing you said there.
Okay.
Both of us didn't feel that way because I'm on record on my NFL matchup show as picking the Vikings, which I was reminded of today.
You were trying to be kind.
You were trying to be kind.
I was trying to help you out.
You got to stand by your picks. You have to be a man of conviction here, Fran.
You like the Vikings more than I did.
But I did. I turned out to be wrong.
Yeah. No, it's all right.
It wasn't the first time, and it won't be the last time.
You and me both.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the game and just obviously very, very surprising just to see how it all unfolded. And you know, once the floodgates opened, I mean, it really just turned on for the Eagles.
Yeah, and it was a very interesting game, seeing it live and then watching it on tape. And, you know, you and I both have studied Nick Foles for a long time. And obviously he's been an Eagle since he was drafted, left for a couple years, now he's back. And he obviously played as good a game as he's ever played, in my view, because it was a game that in some ways was a bit of an outlier for him in terms of the kinds of plays he made.
Yeah,
I mean, he made late in the down pocket throws by navigating the pocket. He made second reaction plays when he left the pocket, as on the 42-yarder to Nelson Aguilar. So he made the kinds of plays that I think it was almost impossible to predict he would make going into the game. It's one thing if he made normal throws within the context of a game.
Like the previous game against Atlanta.
Correct. Yep. Correct. You know, the RPO throws, the rhythm throws, the quick game throws. If that's the way they had won the game, we'd say, hey, he just played a really good game. But he played a game in a way that we've not really seen him play it before, and it was obviously spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see. Obviously, a little bit warmer weather, and I think that certainly helped. You know, I think we've seen a notable difference with Nick Foles when the weather has dipped a little bit, gotten down in the wind chill, down in the teens and the single digits. A little bit warmer on Sunday night. He's able to throw it around and able to sling it a little bit more. Bodes well. I'm going to play in a dome in a couple weeks, and I think I'm very
Yeah, but you and I have to be outside.
Yeah,
in order to get there.
That's a valid point. Yeah. But really, really excited just to, you know, for Nick and just the performance that he had. Some of the throws, the throw on the flea flicker was just outstanding.
It was ridiculous.
I mean, exactly where it needed to be away. Because Harrison Smith got there. I mean, he could have made a play on that ball if it had been thrown a little bit further inside. Nick just placed it beautifully.
No, and we broke that play down on the All-22, and I made the point that you couldn't have handed it to Torrey Smith any better, and it was that kind of throw. I mean, that play was made by the throw.
Yep.
Really, that was the key part. But he made some terrific throws. But, I mean, the plays that stood out to me were the kind of plays I mentioned before. I thought the touchdown to Alshon Jeffrey, which the long touchdown.
The long
I know
one.
Jeffrey caught the short one as well late. But the 53-yarder, you know, that's not the kind of play you normally expect from Nick Foles, where he's in the pocket, he's navigating the pocket, he's throwing very late in the down. And, you know, obviously it's tough to break that play down in detail when you're on a podcast because people can't see it, but they can see it on the All-22. But that was a situation where he was reading one way and totally came back the other way. And, you know, those are not the kinds of throws we normally see.
And what I liked from that, and for some reason this literally just popped in my head and I didn't make the correlation until thinking, visualizing the play in my mind. You remember the game against Arizona where the Eagles went on the road and they lost late? There was the John Brown long touchdown run. It was 2013, maybe 2014.
You mean where Carson Palmer hit John Brown?
Yes.
For the 75-yarder?
Yep, exactly. So it was that. So that game. Early in that game, Nick Foles hit Jeremy Maclin for a deep post for a touchdown. It was 50-plus yards in that area.
I can't quite visualize it.
And it was the same. It was a three-level stretch to the left.
Right.
And Nick Foles didn't like what he saw there, got back, and he hit Jeremy Maclin on a deep post. This was not the same because there was a route adjustment there by Alshon Jeffrey.
Right, right.
You know, he's got his eyes on it. He sees that Nick Foles almost has to get into that second reaction phase because of pressure. He's fighting through contact there from Everson Griffin on his backside, and Alshon breaks it upfield. Great recognition, and I like the fact that both guys were on the same page. You know, that's not the ball going on a deep ball to Alshon. That's not drawn up in terms of how it looked.
No, because that was not the route. It was a backside dig by Alshon Jeffrey off the front side three-level stretch.
Yep.
That was the play. And Alshon, actually, I forget which corner it was. That was it Rhodes or not? But whoever it was, the corner actually.
It was Newman.
It was Newman.
Was
that's correct. It was Terrence Newman, 39-year-old Terrence Newman.
Yeah.
He actually read the route and also jumped in front of Jeffrey. And I think Jeffrey kind of said, you know what? I can't get inside, so I'll just take it vertical.
And I love the fact that they were just on the same page and able to connect there. He hits him in stride. Huge play down the field. Alshon had a couple of nice catches in this game, some in the quick game. We saw some more RPO stuff. I'll tell you what, man. And this has become such a buzzword, and you and I could probably do a whole podcast just on the RPO.
The RPO,
The idea. It's very tough for you and I when we're watching because for the announcers, too, during the game live, every play could look like it could be some form of art. Not every play.
Right.
But a lot of plays look like they
because
could be
because it ends up being a fake handoff out of the shotgun to an offset back and then a quick throw. So it could be an RPO or it could be just the play call.
Yep, exactly. So there are they came out in the second half, and it was five straight RPOs, just him in rhythm. He could hand the ball off. He could throw the quick game, making a pre-snap read, whether it's pre-snap defenders in the box, leverage of a certain defender, the technique of a certain defender.
Right, right, right.
He's making that read, and he makes the decision. He puts the Eagles in position to pick up
yards.
The nice
thing about a player like that, too, is built into an RPO is it has a misdirection dimension to it.
Yeah.
So it can get the defense moving. It forces them to have to play with their eyes and they're put in conflict, really.
Yeah, the one play in that little sequence there, that five-play sequence, was Anthony Barr came on a blitz. He triggered, and seemed to be a defender that Foles was kind of reading there. Foles pulls it.
Yeah, and that's a play, you're talking about the one where he got drilled in the ground.
Exactly.
See, that was a play I wondered, and maybe you know better than I. I wasn't sure because of the route concept that had a rub element if that was a true RPO.
They've run it sometimes where they do have the a two-man concept.
Right, you know, so. Because that had the natural rub.
Yep.
Because it was Aguilar who ran vertically to create the rub on Jeffrey's defender, and Jeffrey cut underneath Aguilar. So, again, you could be right because you've studied in a little more detail than I have a lot of these Eagles plays, but I didn't see that and think that was an RPO.
One of the things I usually like to look at, and it kind of helps me with it, is the offensive line, and
really
is how far that offensive line travels downfield.
Right,
because they know if it's a run play, if it's a pass play, if it's a called pass play, I can't be going 3, 4, 5 yards downfield.
Well, you know, it's so funny how terms and things become in vogue. I remember back when Mike Martz was the head coach of the Rams, and I knew Mike well, and we used to really break down his offense because it was one of the best in the league, obviously.
Show on turf. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, Mike, it's back when Ryan Jaworski was on the matchup show, and we'd call Mike a lot on Tuesdays, and he would explain a lot of the stuff to us. And he was, you know, back then people called it smoke or,
right.
You know, and,
yep.
And he talked about a play where literally only the receiver or sometimes even two receivers, depending on which side the quarterback wanted to go to based on the coverage and the defense, only the receiver knew that it was going to be potentially a pass. The offensive line, they didn't know that. They just knew by the play call that it was a run. So a lot of these concepts existed back 20 years ago. Yep. We've just changed the name, and they look a little different. But as in most things in football, nothing is brand new. It's just sometimes used more prevalently or changed a little bit in the form in which it's used. But, you know, you can go back years with this stuff.
And I remember Brett Favre, when he did the quarterback camp with John Gruden a couple years ago, he said the same thing. So there were plays where me and the receiver had a check, and if I gave him a look, he knew he was going to cut this off. And instead of me handing it off, I was just going to throw a quick little screen to the outside. So definitely it's been around for a while.
No.
And it is fun. It's fun, and obviously it keeps the quarterback in rhythm, and that is certainly something that has worked to Nick Foles' benefit and to the Eagles' offensive benefit because they've been able to move the ball really, 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 really well over the last couple of weeks. Staying in the pass game, Zach Ertz. I mean, to me, the biggest thing in this game, because Zach Ertz had a few really big third down catches, but the third down success. I mean, you and I talked about how
I think
good
Foles
Minnesota
was. 9 for 10 for maybe 153 yards on third down.
I think that was the number.
That's something. And two touchdowns.
Yeah, and that they converted 10 times on third down. And you mentioned on the podcast last week, through 17 games, they had given up
53.
Whatever the number was. They gave up 10.
The Eagles had one-fifth of that in one game.
Unbelievable.
And you know what? It was a combination of many things. It was obviously second reaction plays, late in the down throws, great execution as we broke down on the All-22 as when Corey Clement crossed the formation to pick up the blitz.
Yep.
You know, it was really good play design, getting, you know, defining a read for Nick so he had somewhere to go with the ball quickly.
Yep.
So it's never one thing when you're that good, you know, you do something that well.
Sure.
But that was so critical. I mean, like you said, they were 10 for 14 overall, and I think one of the misses was a kneel down at the end of the game,
right.
So that doesn't even count, really. But Foles was 9 for 10 on third down against that defense.
It's funny you just mentioned it's never one thing when you're really good. I remember when the Eagles were really bad on third down a couple of years ago.
It's never one thing either.
It's never one thing. It's really bad either. It's just funny how it works both ways. Just a ridiculous performance.
Yeah.
And then in the red zone as well, the red zone – the Eagles were 2 for 2 down inside the 20. The Vikings were 0 for 3.
Yeah.
And that's a huge, huge factor in the game.
Without question.
When you have those turnovers and one turnover on downs for the Vikings. And things really just kind of fell apart for them offensively. We'll get to that side of the ball in a little bit. Offensive line, to me, for the Eagles, was really, really good in this game.
I agree.
Big V stood out.
Yeah.
The athleticism of the guys. But then also, the double teams on the backside. So, you know, looking at some of the movement they got, especially on number 92, Tom Johnson.
Right.
I made the joke on my Eagle in the Sky article earlier today that he could have bought a bus ticket because of the amount of rides that kid took, courtesy of the Eagles' offensive line in this game. It was just an outstanding performance by the guys up front.
Yeah, no, it was and like you said, I mean, I think the big V factor is really important. Now, there were a lot of quick game throws, but there also were others where there were not quick game throws, and Everson Griffin was not really a factor in this game.
Yeah, there were some and he seemed. Everson Griffin's known for that first step.
Yes.
Him being able to time the snap count. There were times where V was completely locked in with him.
Yeah,
I mean,
step.
Yeah. Right when Griffin moved, he moved.
That might have been his best game as a pro.
It might have been. I was just going to say that.
From snap one to snap whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that might have been his best game.
Yeah, he got beat on the long play to Jeffrey, you know, where he was the one who was giving up the pressure to Foles. But, I mean, outside, you look at the flea flicker.
But he was beaten a different way. It wasn't beat where he was just,
of course,
you know, beaten.
Yep.
You know,
he got driven backwards.
Right.
But, I mean, I think I might agree. It might have been his best game as a
given the level of talent of the player he was going against.
No question.
Right.
I mean, there was a huge test going up against Everson Griffin. In the run game, they were able to get some things going.
Yeah.
Jay Ajayi, I thought, was solid. You saw LeGarrette Blount, a couple of
the Wham touchdown.
Yep, no question. We keep going back to that.
Yeah.
Interested to see. Do you think that's something? I know I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself. Is that something you expect to see for them against the Patriots? Is that something that would work against that kind of a front?
Well, we'll get into this more, but just to give people a taste, what the Patriots do defensively is, if you put it in sort of the Cliff Notes version, they play with coverage, consistency, and stability, and front multiplicity. Mm. That's what they do. They're very multiple with their front looks.
Yep.
So does Wham work? Sure it does. But then you have to call it. It has to be called against the right front.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like traps and Whams against like an odd front.
Right, right. So and they do a lot of odd fronts, which I'm sure you started just a cursory look.
Yes.
A lot of odd fronts with a zero technique and 2-3 techniques. Yeah. And Wham may not be the best run for that.
Interesting. Well, we'll get into that in a little bit. And then you go to the Eagles defense and just came up clutch with some huge plays. Obviously, the thing that got it all started was the interception return for a touchdown by Patrick Robinson.
Which I think was the only snap in the game that they played quarter half.
That's right. As you made that astute observation when we were doing the All-22 review.
Yeah.
Do you think that was kind of an adjustment? You know, they were marched down the field. The Vikings marched down the field with ease in that first drive.
And that was the second series.
Yes.
It was third and long.
It was the off coverage. Do you think maybe Case Keenum thought maybe they had just a soft off man and he could sneak it in on the outbreaking route?
Well, I kept looking at that play to think that if could the ball have gotten over the top, so to speak, of Robinson if there was no pressure? I don't know. That's where he was throwing it, but I don't know. But it was the only snap of quarter half they played in the game. It's a beautiful changeup. You know, I don't know. Only Case Keenum could tell you if he saw that and read it and still thought he could make the throw, or if that didn't really register.
Fletcher Cox, I thought, was really good again in this game.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, he was very disruptive in the pass game, but more so again in the run game. You know, like we said, they marched down the field that opening drive, but you saw Fletcher at the football pretty consistently in this game.
I thought they did a really good job, and they play a lot of people on the outside, so it wasn't one guy, but it was Curry, it was Barnett, it was Long. I thought they did a really good job against the two offensive tackles, Reef and Hill.
Yep.
I thought they won those matchups.
No question. Chris Long got the better of Hill a number of times. Yep. Brandon Graham. Vinny Curry, I thought,
Curry had a couple of bull rushes, speed-to-power rushes, where he just got underneath Riley Reiff's pads and moved him back.
And you believe that Derek Barnett's sack fumble was arguably the play of the game.
Because, first of all, it was a 14-7 game.
Yep.
The Vikings had one long drive. They were in the process of having another. Really, I think they'd had 11 or 12 plays on that drive up to that point.
Yep.
At that point, the Eagles were not controlling the game. Mm. You know, you didn't have the feel, hey, this game's in the Eagles' hands. And it was third down, and even if they don't convert, they get a field goal, it's 14-10, the game might have a different feel to it. I thought that play really turned around the game.
Yeah, and the a couple rushes before that, you saw some really good rushes from Derek Barnett. Yeah. I thought in this game, yeah, he had the sack fumble, and that was huge, and it was a great play, maybe the play of the game. But I thought he showed some flashes in this game.
Yeah, and you can debate the protection all day. Yep. They used that protection quite a bit in this game. A number of times they added a back into the mix to help with that backside defensive end, but they didn't on that play. It's a tough protection. It's a tough block for the tight end, Morgan.
And I think that you're seeing that a lot this year from against the Eagles, and I think that it mainly comes against that front that we've talked so much about with the three defensive ends, where you've got Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox inside, mainly to just – now the offensive line doesn't have to choose. You don't have to send the center one way or the other because it's a full slide.
It's a full slide.
So you're going to say, okay, we're going to make the rookie beat us is basically what they're saying.
Right, well –
and you're hoping on a quick throw that, of course.
And I thought maybe when we saw it last night and I didn't get a chance to see it in detail that he was throwing to Diggs, but I think he was throwing it to Rudolph on the corner route because Rudolph had leverage. It was kind of a smash concept.
Yeah. There were a couple throws where I thought Keenum didn't pull the trigger maybe as quickly as he normally would have. There was one late in the game where Fletcher Cox got he put him on his back where I thought the ball could have come out a little bit quicker. Anything else in this game when you would go through and you looked at the defensive backs, the linebacker level? I thought Michael Kendrick showed flash in this game.
He sure did.
Yeah.
He made a lot of plays with athletic pursuit.
Yep.
And which is really the kind of player he is.
The
other thing, too, I thought that stood out to me, they ended up not blitzing a lot, but they had that stretch
early
in the game where they blitzed on two or three consecutive third downs and a second down with different people from different spots. Jenkins, I think, a couple of times. But after that, they didn't blitz very much at all. But I thought that sort of set the tempo a little bit.
Can I have an early vote for a player who I think could be a sneaky key contributor for the Super Bowl? And he was a sneaky key contributor in this game. I don't know
on
what
defense?
Yep. I don't know how many tackles he ended up with, but he played a good amount of snaps, especially after the first couple of drives. The Eagles struggled in base. You know, they gave up the touchdown in base. So they go to some more big nickel and some more dime. And Corey Graham had a lot of snaps.
Yeah,
and early on,
yeah.
they tried to run at Corey Graham, and Corey Graham made a couple plays in the run game.
Well, it's interesting you say that because they ended up playing a little more big nickel when they started playing 4-3 with Najee Good, but I think they almost feel more comfortable with Corey Graham in that role.
Even 12 personnel. They're coming out two tight ends, and they've got big nickel, and they've got Corey Graham in there.
And by the way, they'll see a lot of two tight ends against New England, and we'll get to that later in the week.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be really interesting just to see how he's used in this game. Yeah. If Gronk plays, and obviously you mentioned, you imagine that matchup would be Malcolm, but
well, it gives you way more flexibility because Graham can do that too.
He can blitz. He can play in coverage. They've used him deep. They've used him in man at times. So it will be interesting to see how he's used moving forward. Greg, Eagles fans haven't watched a ton of the Patriots, so we're going to dive really deep into this matchup later in the week to set up for the game next Sunday. But just some early thoughts. You mentioned the defensive front. Maybe let's start on the defensive side. Overall thoughts on this defense? What are some of the keys that people could take away without diving too far into the weeds?
Well, they've been predominantly a man-to-man defense, particularly when you get to longer yardage situations and third down.
Will they travel their corners? Would you imagine Gilmore would stay?
And I think they will because they normally do not like Malcolm Butler playing big receivers.
Interesting.
So if they don't feel, Fran, that there's a receiver that they need to do that with, then Gilmore plays left corner and Butler plays right corner. But I can't imagine that they'll want Butler on Jeffrey. Mm. Just my sense from watching them. So it wouldn't surprise me if they travel their corners and get Gilmore, who's a physical guy and can be, get Gilmore on Alshon Jeffrey.
Blitzing unit, not as much blitzing?
They blitz very, very selectively. They blitz when you least expect it. And they'll blitz when they feel that the tempo of the game needs to be changed. Mm. But they're not a big blitzing team.
All right. And then offensively, anything from, obviously, I mean,
they've got a decent quarterback.
Yeah. I think he's got a chance.
Yeah, he's got a chance.
Yeah. Thoughts on just the overall philosophy of that offense?
Well, here's what's happened in the two playoff games. They went through the final 5-6 weeks of the season running the football a lot, and in the two playoff games, they've not run the ball hardly at all, just in terms of numbers of volume of runs. Mm. They've turned it over to Tom Brady.
They probably continue.
Which I would think would be the case. I mean, I think this Eagles defense is very hard to run the ball against.
Yeah.
So they'll throw the football. I think that there's no team, and let's go on the assumption as we – speak this week anyway, that Gronk plays. I don't think there's any team that's more diverse formationally out of base personnel than the Patriots.
So explain that for some of the listeners in terms
meaning
of how they use
that they will line up in so many different formations out of either two tight ends when they have a fullback on the field, Devlin, who's often split out. So they have so many different formations, including empty sets, out of base personnel, because what that means is the defense is in base personnel.
Yep.
Now, that could be a case where the Eagles decide to play big nickel
as
their foundational base defense because of the Gronk factor.
That's why I have that feeling about Corey Graham.
Yeah.
Good or bad. We don't know how it's going to go. A pivotal player to me in this game.
You'd certainly, from a coverage standpoint, rather have Corey Graham on the field than Najee Good. And obviously we saw the touchdown to
Rudolph
to end the first drive. And that was a classic case where they motioned. They didn't go to empty, but they got Murray out of the backfield, split wide, number one to the field. And the Eagles had to make some adjustments on the fly there, and they struggled. And Good was late making his adjustment, and he didn't even react to Rudolph until after the ball was snapped.
Belichick obviously is going to see that. And,
Doesn't mean they'll do the exact same thing, but he's going to recognize some opportunities there out of base personnel.
No question. It's going to be a lot of fun to evaluate this offense. We've got a long
time. The Eagles are in the ball, Fran.
It's still
kind of crazy.
I'm going off like 90 minutes, 2 hours of sleep, and it's every once in a while I find myself pinching myself.
I mean, it's crazy that the Eagles are in the Super Bowl.
It's awesome, man. As a lifelong Philadelphia fan, it's great, great experience. Really, really excited.
Well, I guess they'll just play the Patriots every 14 years.
We'll hopefully come out on the other side on this one, though. Well, Greg, appreciate the time here, as always, on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. We will talk to you later this week in preview of next week's matchup against the New England Patriots. Great stuff from Greg, and you can follow him just like I do on Twitter, at Greg Cosell. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And you know I greatly appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on social media. That is one way to support the show, but the other is to go onto Apple Podcasts or Stitcher and give us a rating, even leave us a comment. I wanted to give a shout-out to Manel1981 and to Mark Drumheller, who both rated the show and left comments saying how much they love listening to the podcast on a weekly basis. So thanks to Manel and Mark and all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Okay, let's keep this show going. I told you earlier that we would break down a prospect from the Senior Bowl. Obviously not down there this year. The first time in 7 years. Very, very happy to be here in Philadelphia, not down in Mobile, Alabama, as much as I will miss that experience. But one player who is down there is Penn State wide receiver Deshaun Hamilton. He is the subject this week in our scouting report.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
So Deshaun Hamilton, just under 6'1", 6'5", 207 pounds, Penn State's all-time leader in catches. Second team all Big Ten this year. He went to the East-West Shrine game a week ago and was a standout player down in St. Petersburg. So he gets the call up to the Senior Bowl because of an injury, someone that pulled out. So now he's got the ability to really kind of prove his wares in front of NFL scouts on a more of a national stage. Four-year starter for James Franklin in that shotgun spread offense. He lined up primarily in the slot with a few reps on the outside, but mostly inside. Decent height, pretty good length. He's got some long arms and some muscle on his frame. Athletically, I would say his best trait is his change of direction and his lateral quickness. He's got some suddenness to him mid-route, and he can accelerate and decelerate with relative ease to help create separation. He plays faster than I think he's going to time out at the combine because he's a very efficient mover. There's very little wasted motion with him. He's got a very defined plan as a route runner, and it's one of the more savvy players at his position in this class. He knows how to change up his stride length mid-route, and at the top of the break, he can stair step, so kind of patter his feet, get on a defender's toes, get his hips flipped, and break opposite. He snaps out of breaks really well, and he can separate at the top of the route. He can use his hands, particularly on a swim move, to kind of stay clean if a defender tries to chuck him early in the down. He did work a lot over the middle of the field. He's not afraid of confined spaces. Consistently tried to stack the defender on vertical routes when he got on top of him, and he can get on his back. Has a knack for playing the ball in the air, displaying the body control to go up and adjust to it mid-flight and get his feet in bounds. Showed the ability to go up and win in contested situations, particularly on those fades over the shoulder with defenders on his back. Very reliable at the catch point and didn't have too many drops. Now, wasn't all good. Obviously, there are some flaws in his game. I wouldn't say that he's truly explosive. I don't think he's going to be viewed as a special player with his top-end speed. Won't be viewed as a dynamic guy in the NFL with the ball in his hands. I don't think he's going to be great after the catch. And he was hidden a little bit in the slot, so I have no idea right now, personally, if he can beat press coverage. So in Mobile, I would imagine that's going to be one of the things he's going to want to try and prove in one-on-ones and then in the game. Can he beat press coverage on a consistent level against top competition? Tends to false step a little bit against off-guard, just a little pet peeve of mine. He'll false step early in the down on some of his releases, and he doesn't always play to his size and his weight as often as I'd like, especially as a blocker. I wish I saw a little bit more aggression from him as a blocker. And then lastly, I know he's got smaller hands for the position, and that shows up a little bit on film. He tends to body catch in all areas of the field. So there are a lot of good things and a lot of things that you want to see kind of improve there with this kid. I don't know that he's ever going to be a star, but I think he knows what he's doing as a route runner for sure. He's smooth without the ball in his hands. He knows how to get open. Since he's not overly big or fast, he'll probably be viewed more as a possession type of receiver in the NFL, but I think he fits in well in an NFL offense as kind of a reliable piece in a successful passing game. You can win with him as a top four receiver. So I'm anxious to see how he looks down in Mobile when he's kind of matched up against his peers, both at corner and receiver. I think he's got the ability to really stick in an NFL offense as a starter even. This kid's got a lot of potential. I'm excited about him, even though his upside isn't super high. So that's all I got on Deshaun Hamilton. Great stuff from Greg Cosell and all of you out there listening, whether you're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and of course on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And one more time, please take a few seconds, go rate the show, leave us a comment. Don't be afraid to leave a question on there as well. This is how we pay the bills here, because I would love the ability to answer it here on the podcast. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I'm Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week in preparation for the Super Bowl.